Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, September 16th, 2011. I'm your host, Greg Luca, and before we get into it, I need to issue an apology here. I mean, I know a lot of our loyal listeners are probably on the lookout Monday or Tuesday for the ever looked after UAB recap. Everybody wants one of those. Everybody needs to hear what happened. And due to some technical issues, my laptop kind of broke, and I was sick, and I had exams. But these are all excuses, and this is weak. And we should have been there, but we're back today, and we're going to get you all caught up. And I am joined by two writers who are going to help me make up for my loss. We have Tyler Jett.
Hey, how are y'all doing? I'm sorry, Greg. It's been a rough 5 days for you. I feel bad about that.
Well, I mean, that's nice. When there's no elaborate shout-out this week, though, you don't have some kind of monologue to get into about big sporting goods.
Not yet, no. No monologues yet.
All right, and we are also joined by, from FightingGators.com, we have Cody Jones.
Yeah, good to be back here as well. Tyler's got his Dick's Sporting Goods bottle. Just because they don't get a shout-out doesn't mean they're not still represented here in the podcast.
That's true. Every season does start at Dick's.
We're really looking for endorsements. If anybody is interested, we can shout your business out on the podcast next time.
This one is brought to you by Logic Studio. I just see a box that says Logic Studio. I don't even know what that is.
Right. Yeah, we get them, and then eventually they'll get us.
This one's for you, Logic and Studio.
So on today's show, like we said, we're going to talk a little bit about UAB. We give you some things to take away from that game, and we're break down John Brantley's performance a little bit of the running game, a little bit of what we saw on defense, maybe some problems in the red zone, maybe not getting enough turnovers. We'll get into all of that. Then we're going to take you through some news of the week. We have Dee Finley's arrest, which is always a fun topic. We have some injury stuff to get caught up on, and then we move right into Tennessee. Got Sharif Floyd's return on the radar here, and just breaking down that matchup, a lot of stuff with Tennessee's passing game that we've heard a lot about. Justin Hunter, Tyler Bray. Before we get started, one thing I want to say is that if you have any emails for us, send them to podcast.alligator.org, feedback on just about anything. We're still looking for reviews of Cody's performance. I mean, we keep bringing him back. I don't know if this is a good move or a bad move. We're looking for more insight on Cody.
Two stars.
We did get two emails this week, though. The first one was from Paul Futch, who said, "Hey, any chance you can make everybody on the podcast the same volume? Great podcast." Well, I'd like to think we could, and I'm trying to keep an eye on the sound levels, but my voice doesn't carry into microphones, apparently. Tyler's got this big, booming 6'4 voice, and it just works well on the microphone.
It's 6'5", but first of all, okay, Paul, sorry. Understand that this is completely intentional. You may think that we're accidentally talking at a different volume, but it's not. This is exactly what we wanted to do. I don't know if you've ever heard the song Dance Yourself Clean by LCD Sound System, but on purpose, he has parts of the song that are very quiet and then very loud. And so if you have it on like your radio or whatever, and you have it like cranked up because it's a quiet part, then out of nowhere, it hits you with a loud part. That's what we're doing. You hear Greg going, you're like, I got to turn this thing up. And then I come to bring the pain, and it's super loud.
You blow out your eardrums.
Yeah, because what I have to say is the most important. So it's actually a strategy of ours.
Okay.
Again, that's Dance Yourself Clean by LCD Sound System. Highly suggest it.
I would rather just... have them think that than to think that we're terrible at
Well, don't say that on the radio. Yeah. We did this intentionally. And
yeah,
let's just move on.
Of course. And then the other thing Paul wanted to know was Coach Z named after Coach Z from the Homestar Runner and Strong Bad cartoons? I'm going to say probably not.
No, he was.
I doubt it.
No, he was. I know that.
Don't lie to the listeners.
I know it. He was.
How do you know that?
Because I watched that cartoon all the time.
It's Zach Kazani. It's Coach Z, right?
That doesn't make sense because it starts with an A. If anything, it'd be Coach A.
Zach? Coach Z?
Oh, well, no,
and
it's for the...
And there's Z's in the last name. There's so many reasons you could be Coach Z.
Yeah, the cartoon is the reason.
All right, well, so
What's the name of the cartoon again? Say it again.
You don't even know. You don't even know.
What's the name of the cartoon? I'll tell you.
It's on homestarrunner.com. Strong Bad?
Oh, yeah, Strong Bad. Yeah. That's why it's Coach Z.
Oh, yeah.
Good email. I agree. From now on, if whoever sends out the best email... just also give your address, and we'll send you a T-shirt. That's we're going to incentivize the concept of sending emails. So from now on, email with an address, you might be getting a T-shirt.
Right. We may or may not announce the winner each week, but we'll send out a T-shirt for sure.
Well, yeah.
Who will next week?
Just like Coach Z is named after the cartoon, we'll send you a T-shirt each week.
Yeah, no. You'll get a T-shirt.
Yep, for sure. Okay, so much to my chagrin, Florida scored a 39-0 win over UAB last week. Not quite as close as I had hoped it would be. Some big things from that game. Obviously, the defense was very strong to pitch a shutout. Matt Elam led the way. He had 7 tackles, and he forced a fumble. That was the team's first turnover of the season, which is big because they're all big into we need to force 3 turnovers a game.
I know, and it's crazy.
It's crazy, right? But I think overall, this is something we could talk about. I don't think the defense was as strong as that score would indicate. Like, I mean, obviously they played well, but I think zero is a little low for UAB. Do you guys agree with that a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, this is the thing that they play these really, really terrible teams at the beginning is you can't really get a parameter on it. We'll find out this week maybe a better idea of how good this defense is. At the most, UAB should have had 14 points. Like, at the most. If that one touchdown doesn't call back, and obviously if Brian Ellis doesn't overthrow his receiver down the seam who beat Matt Elam on a play in the first half. But other than that, it wasn't like UAB was ever getting really close to scoring. It wasn't like they were marching on the field. Like, how do you determine that they were worse than that?
They had to drop fourth down in the red zone, and there's some penalties and stuff. I just felt like they racked up a decent yardage total compared to what you would normally see from a team that got shut out.
That's what I was thinking, too. Yeah, I think it's the yardage more than anything that kind of threw me off a little bit. Like, that you don't see a team give up as many yards as they did and so get the shutout.
Well, how many yards was it?
UAB had 212 yards in the game, and it was 11 drives for them.
Okay, so that's like less than 20 yards a drive. Like, I guess, like, yeah, I mean, when they have 212 yards, I guess it is a little bit surprising that it's 20 points, but it's, again, at the end of the day, it's UAB. It's not a good team, so it's not a great parameter. Also, like, they can be giving up yards when they're already up 24-0. It's not going to matter. You know what I mean? Like, the defense can come out real strong, and then once the game gets out of reach, they may give up more yards than they would have normally because of the fact that it doesn't matter. They weren't clamping down as much, possibly.
Yeah, you make a fair point. I'm probably just comparing it to FAU, and that's why it seems like they were so much better. But.
Yeah, that's what you're going to do when they play Alabama, too. It's like, look what they did against FAU, man. Why aren't they doing that again?
Right. Weren't as many three and outs. I think the big thing is turnover still, and it just wasn't as impressive, I didn't think. You know, they got one turnover, and I don't know. That's still a missing part of this defense.
Right. They say they're trying to rip the ball out more whenever they go for the tackles. The second man in is trying to go for the strip, and then they're obviously trying to get interceptions. It's not like you're just out there not trying to do that. So, I mean, what do they have to do to get the turnover thing?
I think for the interceptions, it's got to come down to the pass rush more. They need to affect the quarterback more. They got to pressure him more, force him to make quick decisions. Because right now, I mean, both quarterbacks have been pretty comfortable, or all three quarterbacks, I guess, because they've faced three quarterbacks in two games. No one's really been affected that much. No one's been forced into bad decisions. And I think the coverage has been okay. Like, it's not like they're giving up a ton of yards. But at the same time, like, if you're not pressured, you're not gonna throw it into bad coverage.
Yeah, and it's been a short passing game, too. That's the other thing Coach Muschamp talked about Saturday was that it's been a lot of the shorter throws, like screen-based offense. I think he said UAB was for a little bit. That's kind of harder, too, obviously, to create the turnover. So it's obviously completely different from what they'll see out of Tennessee. But still something I think needed to maybe improve a little bit through this first.
Plus, Jelani Jenkins has dropped two interceptions.
That's a good point.
I'll blame Jelani.
That's true. I think you guys are right. Between opponent play calling and just like not getting quite the pass rush they could, they had no sacks Saturday. So maybe if they had those things going right, they could be getting more turnovers. On the offensive side of the ball was the Chris Rainey show again. Ran 16 times for 119 yards and a touchdown. Once again, led the team in catches with three, had 43 yards there. I still don't take anything away from this because I still think he's the best athlete against these lesser teams. Do you guys agree with that?
I do. I do like that he led the team in receptions with three.
That's true, yeah. Typical Chris Rainey game here. It seems like he's always the one that kind of beats up on the lower opponents when these games happen. And like you said, it's kind of hard to pull really anything from this game.
And then John Brantley was 12 of 19 for 195 yards. What are your guys' thoughts on his performance? One thing we could talk about, too, Tyler said, you know, Chris Rainey leads the team with three receptions. Is that kind of a problem? Do the receivers need to be more involved?
I think long-term, they have to be involved. I think, obviously, you wrote about this earlier this week. You debated Matt Watts and the Alligator about this. And I got to say, I think eventually they're going to have to go to people other than Rainey. Maybe this week, finally, a defense will, like, key on Rainey and force Brantley to try to get the ball downfield. He threw a couple balls downfield that looked good. He had a couple deep end routes that he was hitting Dunbar on, I think, a curl. He had DeBose on an end route, whatever. Like, he did throw the ball downfield a little bit, but, again, he still just hasn't really been forced to. He's still throwing in the flats a lot, and, I mean, it's just easy money against some of these lesser teams.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing from the first game with him. You know, you're impressed with him. You see the strides he's made, but at the same time, you'd still like to see a little bit more, which, obviously, I don't think we got to see just because of the defense they were playing yet again. They kind of took away that deep ball and opened things up in the flats. And, you know, he did throw down the field a little bit more. I think that was the one improvement we saw. And he looked good doing it over the middle of the field, too, which is kind of been an issue for him in the past 2 years. So he was improved during that. And I don't know, it's still hard to take a huge part of his improvement away from this game, though.
Right, yeah. He definitely underthrew the flea flicker in the beginning. That one wasn't even close. But I thought there was a couple of nice downfield throws over the middle in like the 20 to 30 yard range that were better and were not things that we saw against FAU where he kind of struggled in that range.
So. That was a good point. What was up with that flea flicker? That was a, That was disgusting.
He got hit, but I don't know if it affected
Quinn
that
Dunbar
much.
Had no one within like 20 yards of him. And then Dunbar ends up on the 5-yard line. And after the game, someone asked John Brantley, do you think Dunbar kind of bailed you out in that throw? And he's like, well, I don't know. Maybe I got to watch the film.
He was on the ground. He was on the ground. He got hit.
He had no idea how the throw went.
Right. All right, so we don't need to talk too much more about UAB. It's kind of, obviously, I hope, probably a lot of people listening to this saw the game, and we're a little late on our analysis here. So just before we move on, just one big takeaway. For me, I think it was that UF just athletically and talent-wise is better than I thought they were. Just to be, like, I know a lot of people expected this, but to be so completely dominant against this UAB team was something that stood out to me. Because I didn't think, based on last year's performances and based on just what I knew about these players, that they had the talent to do that. But they impressed me on Saturday.
I guess my big takeaway would be the fact that they need to improve their pass rush. I think everything's been talked about as far as how good this front defensive line is going to be for Florida, how talented the group of sophomores are, and even the upperclassmen, guys like Omar Hunter. That's a lot of talent on that defensive line. And so far, two sacks through two games. They're having a worse pass rush than they did last year. Now, granted, it's been short passes, things like that. Also, they'll get Sharif Floyd back this game, so that should give them a boost. But I think that you need to see an improvement going forward if you're going to be good against some of these better teams, and then that's coming up, like, right now.
Mine is probably the fact that I don't feel like we know anything about the secondary at this point. Through two games, I think that's kind of crazy that you go from these short passing games that they face to now playing Tennessee, who's going to try to throw the ball all over the field. They're going to be thrown into the fire. And I think that's got to be at least somewhat scary for this coaching staff, being that they've never really seen anything out of these players on the field in terms of the secondary coverage. And now they got to face a guy, Tyler Bray, who's the reigning SEC Player of the Week. So definitely going to be a tougher challenge for him this week.
And a couple more things I jotted down when I was thinking of mine. Mike Gillisley ran 11 times for 80 yards. Did we take anything away from his performance? Did he impress you guys? Because to me, I just felt like it was just garbage time, and UAB was obviously defeated by then, and I don't know how much I took away from that, but a lot of people seem to be high on Mike Gillisley this week.
I've always liked the way Mike Gillisley runs. Like, even if he's not having a lot of yards, it's kind of like watching Trent Richardson at Alabama. Some of these games, he might end up with, like, 105 yards, but it looks way more impressive than that because he breaks, like, 3 tackles a run. Mike Gillisley might have, like, a 4-yard run, but it looks way more impressive than maybe Chris Rainey sometimes because he'll, you know, break a couple tackles, whatever. He runs hard. I like him a lot. I would honestly like to see him get more carries in, like, real time. Because obviously, once you play some of these better defenses, I don't know if the speed backs, Demps and Rainey, are going to get the job done at all times. You might need a tougher runner. I thought Gillisley looked pretty good last year in those situations.
Yeah, they went to the Joy or Burton running the ball in the red zone. I think Gillisley's a guy that could do that if they need to, or maybe even just if they want to. He's shown that he can run between the tackles quite a bit. And maybe if Demps is limited a little bit this weekend, he could have a bigger role like he did last weekend.
Okay, so assuming Demps is fine and Rainey's good to go, I'll say over under 5.5 carries for Mike Gillisley this weekend. What would you guys say to that?
I'm going to say under. I think it should be over, but I'm going to say they're probably going to be 5 or less.
I agree with that. I think they kind of proved last week they want to go to Joyer and Burton in the red zone in those short yard situations, so I would probably say under as well.
All right, so speaking of the red zone, one more thing on this. What did you guys make of the red zone struggles as they were made out to be? The first couple drives they got down there and then stalled. What did you guys think was the cause of that? Is this something to be concerned about going forward, or is that just an aberration?
I think it's kind of an aberration. I think it's going to be hard to tell. I didn't necessarily think that – it's not like in the spread offense the years past where there's, like, fundamentally something wrong with your offense once you get into, like, the 10, the 15-yard line or whatever. This offense is, a regular pro-style offense. They should be actually better in the red zone this year than they were last year, just in the way that they run the ball and the way that they play the game. They had a holding call at one point. One thing is Brantley's not great at the red zone. He was throwing the ball into the hedges on a couple fade passes, so that doesn't help. I think once they started getting the ball into Burton's hands, into Joyer's hands, like Cody said, I think that the red zone offense really kind of picked up because those guys can be a power back. I also like them putting the Wildcat in the red zone. I think that helps a lot.
Another issue I think that kind of hurt the red zone offense was that Jordan Reed got hurt, and he's a huge, obvious red zone target for them and a guy that they want to feature in those situations. So not having him in there, I think Muschamp kind of said that too, that some of the personnel being hurt kind of switched up how they did things. I think Demps was another one. So I think that's kind of part of what it was, but there's no doubt that I think that, like Coach Muschamp said, that things are easily correctable for them.
Yeah, they kept talking about miscommunications. Like, I guess people were subbing in for the wrong guys. Like, maybe they brought in a tight end, and that tight end subbed in for another tight end instead of subbing in for a receiver. So all of a sudden you've got maybe a 1 tight end package when you wanted a 2 tight end package or something along those lines, which seems a little silly, although I believe that can happen. It gets hectic on the sidelines during a football game. So I can see why that would happen. But and if that's the case, it's kind of an aberration. Like, that's sometimes going to happen. And it's not from a lack of focus. It just sort of happens sometimes. No one's really at fault.
Right. I'm with you guys for the same reason. I think the formation and the style fits the red zone kind of offense. And I think they have some power backs they can put in there in goal line situations. Last thing on UAB, I thought the offensive line looked good once again. We talked about how we need to see cohesion and, you know, togetherness from this unit. I thought we saw some more of that on Saturday. Just anybody's thoughts on that?
I mean, yeah, like 299 yards rushing, 50 run plays versus 20 or 55 run plays versus 20 pass plays, I believe. I mean, it was pretty clear they were just going to try to run the ball all day. And they, I mean, UAB never really stopped them.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought a lot of positive, as many positives as you could take from that game. I don't really know, again, how much you can take when you're dominating a defensive line that you probably should. But, again, I thought they looked about as well as they could. They're one of 10 teams that haven't given up a sack in America, and five of those have only played one game. So, really impressive by this offensive line so far.
All right, some big off-the-field news this week. Well, relatively big. Dee Finley was arrested outside the stadium on Wednesday, was it?
It was Monday.
Monday. So, yeah, close by me, but yeah. So Tyler wrote our story on that, so I'll just kick it to him, and he'll give you guys the breakdown of what happened.
Yeah, you had the week right, but yeah, it was this week, but it was Monday. He was driving a scooter kind of near Ben Hooker Stadium, trying to get into the stadium for meetings, practice, whatever. He apparently went around a barricade. Some UPD cop who was apparently just looking for people to go around the barricade and pulling them over. And when Dee Finley did that, he asked for his license and registration, and Dee Finley said, "I don't have time for this, I'm late." And he said, "No, you can't leave, you gotta show me your license and registration." Backstory is, Finley has like a suspended license, and he's gotten in trouble for driving with a suspended license 3 times already. One was open already, like one he was supposed to go to court next Monday for, to kind of like pay the fine and be done with that one. So he was like a week away from that, and he gets pulled over again. And he shouldn't be driving with a suspended license. That's the whole term. That's what it's about. So he gets in trouble for that. Basically, he doesn't want to show him his license or anything like that. The cop says, "No, you got to show me it." Finley tries to drive off. The cop like grabs his wrist, I guess, and then Dee Finley like breaks away from the wrist grab. And apparently, in the term that was used in the police report was he squared up on the cop while still straddling the scooter, which sounds like some sort of like Jersey Shore term. Like, I squared up on you.
Badass.
I don't really understand what squaring up means. But anyway, at this point, the cop pulls out his taser, and Dee Finley's like, "All right, I'm gonna stop squaring up on you, and I'm gonna chill out for a little bit." And he eventually shows him the registration and all of that, and it's like, "Oh, this is suspended, so there's a misdemeanor there." And also the cop decides to charge him with, at the time, a third-degree felony for violence against an officer. Now, from what I understand from my roommate's father, who's a longtime cop in Buffalo, apparently it's pretty common for you to just, like, give him a harsher charge initially, knowing it's probably going to get dropped to something lower, because you can't ever go the opposite direction. Like, you can't give him a misdemeanor and then say, no, we're going to make this a third-degree felony after the fact. So I think that's probably what went into that. That's why it was a third-degree felony at first. That's why everyone, like, freaked out at first. Because honestly, that doesn't sound like assaulting against a cop as much as it is like kind of getting into an argument with a cop. But anyway, he ends up going to jail, and Tuesday morning he gets let out. He appears before a judge. Huntley Johnson will be representing him. He represents every UF athlete ever, because they always get arrested. And that's kind of where we're at right now. And Muschamp hasn't really been vocal one way or the other about what's going to happen with Dee Finley. He just says, "We're going to take care of this internally." So.
One more thing I want to add is that the state attorney reduced Finley's felony charge to resisting arrest without violence, which is a misdemeanor. So I think he's pretty much in the clear as far as felonies go.
Yeah, that's what I said.
All right, I wasn't sure if you got that.
I didn't say the state attorney yet, but he ended up getting reduced.
So it's not a felony anymore. I think Finley will be all right. What kind of punishment he has from the team is something else entirely that I don't think we can speculate on. But we think this is going to have any effect on the field, either for missing Finley or for what it does to the rest of the guys, or in any way? Do we think this is going to matter?
I got to say, I think no and no. Finley doesn't play that much. Also, I don't think it's going to really hurt morale to see a player get a misdemeanor. It didn't. I mean, there have been worse, Lord knows, in the past. So I can't imagine that this is going to really, really bring the team down.
Yeah, it's not like a Sharif Floyd thing where they feel like their teammate was wronged or anything like that, and they're all kind of rallying around him. It's, I mean, he got arrested for what he did, and it is what it is. He's a backup linebacker, so it's not going to be – I don't think it'll be too much of an issue on the field.
Yeah, obviously, this isn't a huge deal. It's a misdemeanor. I mean, it's stupid. That seems to be the theme with almost all of UF's arrests. It's like, it's not always like this huge dangerous thing as much as it's just a really silly thing. Like whoever it was that threw cups at Jimmy John's at a woman and ended up getting a misdemeanor for that or whatever it was. And Dorian Monroe for taking the boot off of his car. Like it's things like that that are just really just kind of almost comical. But it, at the end of the day, it also makes the individual look bad because now it's 7 arrests in 10 months under Muschamp.
Right. Yeah, I have nothing else to add to this. But the arrest thing is kind of troubling. I could see where Tyler, you wrote a column where you said Muschamp should potentially be in, have a clause in his contract for everybody who gets arrested. He would take a little bit of a pay cut. It would come out of his salary for like to incentivize a clean program. And whatever's going to happen with the punishments and all that, we don't really know. It's not really worth speculating on. But moving on a little bit to the injury news, there's a lot of stuff with tight ends this week. We have Jordan Reed. We thought he just had a twinge in his hamstring. This is what Muschamp told us. It was just a twinge. But he was sighted, apparently, reportedly, around campus on crutches with a knee brace. If Finley's not good to go, I mean, if Finley. If Reed
well,
is,
Finley won't be good yet.
If Reed is not good to go, how does that affect Florida this weekend? What do you guys think?
I mean, it definitely affects him because I think that's the guy who's probably their best pass-catching target. We kind of touched on that in the red zone. I don't think just in the red zone. I think in general, he should be your best receiver. I think when we did like kind of the preseason podcast, we predicted that he would lead the team in receptions just because he's so athletic. He's going to create mismatches. And I don't really think they have another pass-catching threat at tight end. I don't think Gerald Christian's much of a threat. We haven't seen anything from him. I can't imagine Clay Burton is much of a threat, the other Burton. So I think it's going
to
affect them.
If A.C. Leonard comes back, he could maybe be that guy. I know. I think they said he was trying to practice Monday. He tweeted, apparently, that he was back this Saturday. Who knows what that actually means, whether or not he is or not. But a freshman that looked really good in the spring game and showed some signs. So he could maybe slide in there. But, yeah, there's no doubt losing Jordan Reed would hurt them if that is the case. I think I whiffed pretty bad on my Gator guarantee last week of 90 yards and 2 touchdowns. But, again, that's just how much I think maybe it's just me. I think he can do in this offense, and it really hurts them, especially, I think, in the red zone. But like you said, really all over the field.
Do you think AC like will play this weekend? Like, do you think it's in play?
I don't think he would have practiced Monday. If he did, I mean, if, that's what they said. They were going to try and get him out there after his surgery. So, I mean, if he went out there and looked good, especially if Reed can't go, I think that's a position you might see him maybe forced into action over – a guy like Clay Burton, who's played tight end here for a couple weeks now.
Just to recap a little bit on Leonard, what we know is that during the fall camp, he tore the meniscus in his knee, and he had a surgery to repair that. He was supposed to be out for a few weeks, and he did. He missed all the games up till now and a lot of the fall practice, but reportedly he was back in practice this week, like they said. So we don't know much more than that, but we'll see if he's out there. Another guy who was hurt was Jeff Demps, who left the game against UAB with a bang on his shoulder. That's all we knew about that one, but Muschamp said he's fine. There was a little bit of speculation that maybe like the shoulder injury this year, it's a shoulder injury last year, they might be connected. I think that's probably unlikely. Does anybody think this is going to affect Jeff Demps? We have nothing to go on, but do you see this mattering? Did anything about this week strike you as like maybe they're hiding something? Or?
I don't have no reason to think that he won't be available for this game. I don't think this specific injury will hurt him, but the concept of Jeff Demps getting hurt will hurt him because he's always going to be getting hurt. Like we've always said this, like he's just injury prone because of the fact that he's not that big of a guy, and you're going to be going against some pretty big linebackers, some big defensive linemen coming forward.
Yeah, it's kind of scary from his perspective that, I mean, it was something last year that seemed minor, and they said, yeah, he's probable, I believe, the week after he got hurt in Knoxville last year, and then it seemed like we didn't see him the rest of the season except for maybe 2 or 3 carries a game when they absolutely needed him. So I think there is a reason for concern just based off that. It seems like he's a guy who maybe doesn't recover that well, or they were just lying the whole time last season. So I don't think we can just kind of brush it off and say that he'll be completely fine just yet.
Right. Until we know more, though, it's not worth saying anything.
Right.
We'll just have to see what happens on Saturday. And another injury, we have Jeremy Brown, who has missed some time with his knee. One thing, Dan Quinn said he looked good in practice, and he's happy with his performance. Muschamp was a little worried about his lateral movement in terms of getting side to side and changing direction. Muschamp was always kind of fine. He said Jeremy Brown is fine to run straight and like just straight line, straight forward. He's fine with that. That's not a problem for the knee. But when he has to change directions a little bit, that's been problematic. If Jeremy Brown is good to play this weekend, do you guys think he gets serious time in the rotation, or are we probably going to stick with Riggs and Roberson?
I think they would stick with Riggs and Roberson just because Brown, this would be his first week of practice back, or his second week, but like, you know, I don't feel like he's fully recovered. Maybe he gets in for some nickel baggage or something like that. I can't see them relying too heavily on him. But I don't even think he's going to be available because I wasn't really convinced by Quinn that he seemed good. Like, it was like, how's Jeremy Brown look? And he kind of hesitated and he said, oh, he looked good. But it seemed like it's one of those things where he was kind of had to say he looked good. He's like, oh, he looks terrible. And he kind of said, like, it's still a day-to-day thing trying to progress him. But it didn't seem to me like Jeremy Brown is that good yet.
Yeah, I don't think that I would throw him out there against Tennessee even. And the reason for part of that is the fact that they've got Justin Hunter and Derek Rogers. I don't feel like covering one of those two guys would be really the welcome back you want if you're not completely 100%. Maybe you try to get him healthy in the next week, throw him out there against Kentucky, and get a couple reps for him before Alabama comes here. But I think that would be a pretty tough task to just expect him to go out there and blanket one of those guys when you've got two guys like Riggs and Roberson who've played the first two games and are starting to build some experience and have looked pretty good in minimal testing, obviously, so far.
Right, that's a fair point. He is the most experienced corner on the roster right now, but he hasn't played this season. So like you guys said, we don't know what we would see from him if they just threw him out there against such stiff competition. But last thing on the injury/sitting front, we have Lyndon Trail, who was just left off the travel roster because he apparently, one thing Muschamp said, all he said about it was he just needs to play better. Something that's interesting because with Sharif Floyd out, they were kind of a little bit more strapped for depth at the defensive end position, and Trail still couldn't even find his way onto the field. I mean, he's a freshman. We haven't seen him play. We don't get to talk to him, but do you guys make anything of this situation? Do you think we could maybe see a transfer or something like that, or what do you guys make of Lyndon Trail, if anything?
He doesn't sound like he's very good.
Yeah. For Muschamp to say that, though, it almost makes me think there's something else going on. You know, like, he hasn't thrown other guys under the bus and been like, you know, that guy just really needs to play better. He's not playing well at
all.
That's
true.
So it kind of makes me, I don't know, I guess that's totally just speculation on my part, right. But it kind of seems like there might be something else going on there.
All right, so now we're going to get into our Tennessee preview. Big story coming into this game is that Sharif Floyd is making his return this weekend. Obviously, he missed the first two games with the NCAA suspension after they deemed that he had received impermissible benefits. He has served the two-game suspension. He's at least arranged to repay the $2,700 to a charity of his choosing, and now he's going to get back on the field. Tyler talked about earlier how the pass rush hasn't been quite what they may have wanted or what they may have expected. Do you think Sharif Floyd's going to help in this area for them?
I would think so. Like, he's looked good at times last year, but he's similar to Ronald Powell and Dominic Easley in that, like, we've heard a lot of great things about them, not necessarily seen a whole lot great. I guess Easley's played pretty well, but the point is that, like, there's been a lot of hype about this pass rush group. Sharif Floyd's been part of that hype, but we haven't seen it yet. But I got to imagine that Sharif Floyd could be a huge, huge asset, especially coming off the edge, that they haven't played in defensive end a lot, as well as defensive tackle. And Muschamp and Dan Quinn have both talked about in the last 2 weeks how the big key has been they've got to get better edge rush. So that's really going to come to Sharif Floyd and I guess Ronald Powell or whoever else is playing defensive end with him.
At this point in their careers, I feel like he's probably the most proven out of Easley and Powell.
Yeah, no, I think
he looked so good last year. But my thing is, that was that defensive tackle. Like, he's still a 280, 290-pound defensive end. I don't know if I'm ready to say that he's, like, a guaranteed, like, fix-it-all for this pass rush, especially off the edge. Like, he was really good and really disruptive up the middle last year. But going against more athletic tackles that are going to be quicker, that's kind of how he caught guys off guard last year, was with his quickness up the middle. But that's against a lot slower guard. So I think he definitely will help. He can't be a whole lot worse than what they had there before. But I think I'm not ready to say he's definitely going to, like, fix this whole situation.
Yeah, I think one thing that's key when we talk about Sharif is just, like, the guy who was starting in his place was William Green. And William Green's a guy who gets a lot of flack just for not having done a ton in his career. And I think he's a little bit out of place as a 3-4 end, which is kind of what he was playing in Sharif's absence. So I think just above replacement, Floyd's going to be a lot better than what they had out there. One thing, do you guys think that Sharif Floyd plays end in a 4-3, or, like, he's only out there at end for 3-4, and then, like, if it's a 4 lineman, he's inside? What do you guys expect to see in terms of where he plays?
I feel like they said he was going to slide in a little bit in 4-3. I don't know if that means all the time or what that it means, but I think that was during media day early on in the fall.
Mm-hmm. That might be, like, they might start running, like, a 4-3 over kind of look, where you have one of the linebackers look like he's playing off the edge a little bit, and Sharif goes down, and you essentially have a 5-2 front. I could see that.
Yeah, that's fair. I think they could put a guy like Sharif, who's much bigger and more of a defensive tackle type, at edge, because one thing they talked about is that they really want to collapse the pocket, because they don't really care about, like, sacks as much as affecting the quarterback, they call it, which has to do with a lot of things. It's hits, it's just disturbing him, it's being in his face, but it's also resets, which is something where they said if they push the offensive lineman back and the quarterback has to move his feet and set up somewhere else, that's a win for them, and I think Floyd could help them a lot in that area. The whole pass rush is going to be key this weekend because they're going up a Tennessee offense that relies a lot on the passing game. Tyler Bray, sophomore, threw for 698 yards and 7 touchdowns in the first two games without a pick. He's thrown to Justin Hunter, who's 6'4", and had 16 catches for 302 yards and 2 scores already, and Derek Rogers, who's 6'3", had 15 catches for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. How can Florida match up with these guys? That doesn't seem like a great fit for them.
It doesn't seem like it. We haven't seen, like we've said, the defensive backs are a little bit unproven at this point. We don't really know. They're still young. But it does seem like this is going to be their first real test. And I got to say, it's going to be really interesting to watch what Tyler Bray can do, what these receivers can do against this young defensive backfield.
Yeah, I don't think they can really match up at this point. I know it seems a little hopeless to say that, but I think Tennessee has such a big advantage there, especially with the height of those receivers too. Florida still has the smaller cornerbacks. It seems like Roberson it finally brings some height to that position. That's why Muschamp likes him so much. But again, there's a huge mismatch there that if Tennessee can exploit it, could make for a really high-scoring matchup. I think that's what this game's going to be either way, but I think that's mostly why. If they can, they're going to throw the ball over the place. They're going to do their best to do that and almost just kind of run when necessary. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how Florida matches up. I think you're going to see a lot of different blitzes that we haven't seen the first 2 weeks just to try and be creative to get some sort of pressure on them.
I disagree with you on the running attack thing just because they've actually run the ball more than they've thrown the ball.
Yeah.
And a lot of those, you look at their drives, I think they've had two or three explosive touchdowns, 70, 80-yard touchdowns, but the majority of them have actually come on kind of long, sustained drives. And a lot of the times, the key is, I think I wrote about this today's paper, that the key is, on third downs, and they're great at converting third downs. They're the best team at converting third downs in the SEC right now. They're 20 for 30, whereas Florida actually has the best third down defense. They're, teams are 3 for 23 against them. And the key is that Tennessee's been in some manageable third down situations. If third and five are shorter, they convert 85%, and anything longer than that, they convert 30% of them. And a lot of that has been predicated on getting some good runs on first and second down that gets them in short situations, and then Tyler Bray can thrive because you don't really know if it's a run or a pass situation. So I still think that they still need to stop the run. If they can stop the run, that can help them a lot because Tennessee's not nearly as good on third and six and longer than they are shorter than that.
I just feel based on this matchup alone, looking at the Florida defense, that seems to me what their strength is run stop. You've got those defensive linemen, the linebackers look pretty good in run stop so far. Again, it's hard to make that assumption based off the competition we've seen, but it seems like I don't think Tennessee can completely abandon the run whatsoever. They still have to at least make Florida respect it a little bit, but I think Tennessee's game plan has to be come in here and just try to throw the ball all over.
I could see Tennessee busting a couple big explosive plays, a couple long ones. But I think even if Tennessee does that, Florida can still do fine defensively if they can, let a couple of those go, but then stay in check and stop the run and force Bray into some obvious third and 12 situations.
Right. Can't argue with Tyler's stats. As a stat guy myself, I respect his work there. But one thing that I noticed is that Hunter and Rodgers both average in the area of 15 yards a catch, so they're certainly able and have been making some big plays, more so than kind of a methodical 7 yards.
Well, when you get an 80, when you have an 80-yard touchdown pass in there, that's going to change your whole stats.
Over
you know what I mean?
Two games, that outlier can change it a lot. But outlier, see, I'm so into the stats. But when we talk about the running game, we got Derek Dooley on the SEC teleconference. One thing he said was that they don't feel like they have the kind of downhill line and running game that can just line up and they're going to run it and they can just take it to you. And he said that Florida's defensive line is what he thinks is the most talented defensive line in the country. And Tennessee's offensive line is a young group. They started 4 freshmen last year. Obviously, they're all coming back. And then Torin Poole back there, kind of a downhill, more of a power runner, but maybe that doesn't quite fit what they want to do. It's going to be interesting to see how that works out. How big do you think Florida's defensive line advantage is versus what Tennessee is going to try to do in the run game? Do you think, Cody kind of seemed to think they would be able to shut them down pretty much?
I think they should be able to. It's kind of been a tale of two games for Tennessee's offensive line. They looked absolutely horrible in the Montana game and got dominated by a defensive line that they really shouldn't have. Looked better against Cincinnati, but still I don't think looked all that great. It's a group that has some experience. Now their left tackle, I believe Dallas Thomas, is probable. I think he's going to play, but he's got an ankle injury that has him off a little bit. So I think there's some question marks there and still some inexperience with those guys that they really haven't. They haven't proven a whole lot against a defensive line anywhere close to what they're going to see this weekend.
I agree with you. I think that Florida will do a good job of stopping the run. They've done a good job so far, and I think that I don't necessarily see Tennessee's running game as being good enough to succeed against Florida. But I think Tennessee's running game needs to be good for them to have success against Florida.
Right. It's obviously a big step up in competition for both teams, but I think based on what we've seen so far, we should expect Florida to be pretty good against the run this game. Moving over to Tennessee's defense a little bit, there's a lot of new faces on there. There's a lot of new guys on defensive line, but they've generated some good interior rush and have some players there. A lot of new faces at linebacker. They start 2 true freshmen, if I have that right. And in the secondary, One name that stuck out to me was Jansen Jackson, but he's been dismissed from the team. So new faces there, too. So far, all we've seen is the two games. They've given up about 230 pass yards and 130 rush yards a game, but that's against lesser teams. I don't know the circumstances of that. Those are two big wins for Tennessee, so maybe a lot of that was in garbage time. If you're Florida, how are you attacking Tennessee's defense? What's your game plan coming in?
I'm really interested to see how they use Rainey and Dimps if he's available, because of those two freshman linebackers for Tennessee are both outside linebackers. So if they start running those outside run plays like they've done a lot the first 2 weeks, it's going to be really interesting to see how that happens and moving Rainey and Dimps out of the pocket and into the flats on passing plays as well, where they're presumably matched up with those guys as well. So I think that's an interesting mismatch there to see if Weiss can maybe exploit that a little bit or not.
Yeah, I guess like Weiss says, and this is the obvious thing, is it's going to depend on how Tennessee plays them. That's going to predicate what they do. I would expect that Tennessee's going to, you know, try to force Sean Brilliant to throw the ball. You got to expect that eventually it's going to happen. I know that this isn't a great defense, but it's still an SEC defense, so it's still a step up from what we have seen the last couple of weeks. And so I think this is going to be the first team that is going to try to maybe challenge John Brantley and say, you try to beat us.
Right. Last week we saw UAB play in the flat a little bit. I think there was some times where they had zones where guys were down there. It disrupted things somewhat, and we saw John Brantley have to go down the field a little bit more. Do we think Tennessee takes that even a step further and they're watching the flat like every play, or do we think that it's kind of more of what we've seen, more the same of what we've seen so far?
It's going to happen eventually. Some defense is going to do that eventually. And every week I keep saying it's going to happen. I think this maybe will happen this week. I think that's what it's going to happen this week. I'm going
to
say that.
It's got to be, right? I mean, that seems like the first thing you have to take away with this offense. But again, it seemed like that after the FAU game too. So I don't know. I think especially with an SEC caliber defense, you've got to at least trust your secondary a little bit to play one-on-one with these Florida receivers that really haven't proven anything.
All right, I'm going to put you guys on the spot a little bit, and we're going to do some score predictions here. I'll start so you guys have about 30 seconds to think of something, but I've got Tennessee winning this one 28-24.
Whew.
Just because I think that, like we've talked about with the passing game and Hunter and Rodgers and Tyler Bray, I just think that it's going to be too much for this Florida secondary to handle. And I'm not convinced that the pass rush is going to be good enough to make up for that, so I've got Tennessee coming out with the win here.
Will you hate the Gators? That might be a reason why Florida losing.
I really thought about picking Florida just without thinking about it, because it's kind of like you got to go after you think UAB might be able to win. You kind of just have to go all the way the other side and just give in, but I couldn't do it.
Yeah, the UAB thing didn't really work out so well for you.
No, it really didn't.
We need to read those 10 reasons why UAB is going to beat Florida. That was a great column.
They're going to beat Florida. It's why they could beat Florida.
Yeah, they couldn't, though.
Well, if they played the game 100 times, UAB probably wins like one.
Maybe. We should have. It's in the alligators.com, alligator.org archive, so someone go find that. That's a lot of fun. My score prediction is 31-21 Florida. I think Tennessee will get a couple long ones. They might get another touchdown on a regular drive. Offensively, I don't know. I don't have any other reason. I think Florida will do okay offensively.
I really thought about picking Tennessee, and I'm still going back and forth a little bit. I think I'll probably take Florida right now, 34-31. I think it's going to be a really high-scoring game. Both defenses can't really stop each other. And I don't know, though. I might change that by the end of this podcast.
All right, it's time to move into our Gator Guarantees, the time of the show everyone's been waiting for. We'll start by recapping last week's. Tyler told us that John Brantley was going to throw downfield a lot and that this was going to result in two interceptions. Didn't quite happen. I think we can give him half a win. There was a few more downfield throws like we talked about earlier, but not quite the two interceptions. Tyler, what's your reaction to how this went out for you?
Well, John Brantley tried to throw a couple picks, but it just wasn't happening. Quentin Dunbar was way too open on that flea flicker at the beginning. If he was anything close to covered, that would have been an interception. But still, I can't make excuses. I messed up. I'm sorry, guys. No picks. Threw the ball downfield maybe like 7 or 8 times. I don't really know. Like, it's hard to tell exactly. Like, we don't have the exact stats on that. But he did throw the ball downfield a little bit. So I was close. I was in the vicinity, but I didn't quite get it.
Right. In Tyler's defense, he only had to throw the ball 19 times. Most of the time, they could just run it and just win. So it wasn't really like he had to really air it out for the team to be successful. We move over to Cody. Cody said that Jordan Reed would have 100 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns. And he had 2 catches for 19 yards.
So I nailed it, is what you're saying.
I'm a little bit short.
How many of those were for touchdowns?
I'm going to blame it on injury, knowing full well that even if he was healthy the whole time, John Brantley probably wouldn't have let it happen anyway.
That's a fair point. Injury. We'll give him 1/10 of a win.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, you get 0/10 of a win. You don't deserve even close to a win. I don't even deserve to be close to a win, but you're giving me something kind of close. You're not even in the ballpark.
Getting a gear guarantee is very, very difficult.
To quote Mercury Morris, you're not even in the neighborhood.
Fair. And let's see. Mine was that Brian Ellis would throw for 300 yards, and he ended the game with 141, so I did not even get halfway. I mean, we could really talk about who is the most wrong, but we're just going to move on. We don't need to,
we're gonna say that it's got to be you.
Probably.
Yeah.
Just on so many levels. But anyway, just going to move into this week's time. We'll start with you. What do you got for us?
All right, well, I'm going to call out Derrick Rogers. When he was in high school, senior in Calhoun High, he actually stole my cousin's computer presentation for some sort of computer class, like a PowerPoint thing. And he is going to get in trouble for that. He's going to get his payback this week with Matt Elam, because Matt Elam and him have been kind of chatting back and forth on Twitter. Mostly it's been Matt Elam calling out Derrick Rogers. So Matt Elam's going to be headhunting, and it's only going to be because of Vladdy Reddick, my cousin.
So wait, what's the guarantee? Because next week I'm going to have to go back and listen to it and see how you did. I don't know
Derrick
what
Rogers,
you just said.
Derrick Rogers is going to get boomed by Matt Elam.
Okay, this one we can check up on.
Wow. All right, I'm going to go with there will be at some point a celebration where Dominic Easley mocks Smokey the dog on the sideline. I don't know how it's going to happen, if it will be after a sack or touchdown, but it's going to be...
How do you mock Dominic Easley? I mean, how do you mock Smokey the dog?
I don't know.
On all fours?
Don't question Dominic Easley.
Be more specific.
If somebody was going to find a way, he would do it.
It might end up with a torture rack. I'm not sure.
He's going to torture rack the dog?
It will be involved.
Sorry, listeners in Virginia who are really insensitive to that.
That's outstanding. I really am upset that I don't have something funny to add to this conversation, but I mean, as usual, but... I think John Brantley's just not going to have a very good game. I don't think he throws for even 150 yards in this one. I think
south of 150.
I think he very much struggles against what a real team secondary. So that's what I'm doing this week. All right, that about wraps up the show. Send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. We appreciate the emails we got this week. Again, we want to apologize for missing the show on Monday, but we will be back on Monday this time around with a little Tennessee recap. So be on the lookout for that. Until then, you can follow us on Twitter @AlligatorSports. You can follow me @GregLuca. Tyler's going to give you his elaborate handle right now and a whole description about why it sucks.
All right, it's Tyler_Jet. I've been having a Twitter war with the regular 1_Jet for the last week, and he will not let it abide. I've got a couple other people start tweeting at him to tell him to change his Twitter handle to _ and give me the _. I reached out to him and said, hey, man, let's just switch it, because this guy has like 12 followers. And you look at, like, his timeline on tweets, and, like, half of them are, like, responses to people saying, no, I'm not that Tyler Jet. So let's mobilize this thing. Keep on sending tweets to him and me. When you tweet me, tweet him as well and tell it to the point. So _ and _ and let's flood that guy's box until he just gives up.
And then Cody, where can we find you?
Yeah, it's C Jones, FI Gators. I say every week on here that I'm going to change it because that's awful. So hopefully that'll happen at some point soon. But until then, we'll see.
And we can find your stuff at FightingGators.com. Talk about that for a little bit.
Correct. Yeah, we cover everything, football, basketball, baseball. Recruiting is kind of the lifeblood of the site. We've got a couple people who do that and focus on all that kind of stuff. So whole message board angle, which people seem to love, we've got that as well. So a little bit of everything.
All right, so that about wraps up the show. Be sure to pick up a copy of the paper. I don't think we plugged that enough. We actually make a newspaper here. That's something you guys might want to look into. You can also subscribe on iTunes. You can get us on Facebook, facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. And all right, that's it. Thanks for listening.